Hello, I'm Anna Maria Caruzzi, and welcome to this series of podcasts on interdisciplinarity. Bridging across methods and models in the biosciences is brought to you by the Systems Toxicology Unit of the JRC EU Reference Laboratory for Alternatives to Animal Testing. Today I'm joined by Robert Marder, who is working at Roche PRED, that's Pharma Research and Development, as a project toxicologist across different disease areas, including oncology, neuroscience, infectious diseases, and others. Thank you very much, Robert, for joining me today.
Hi, Anna Maria. Nice to be here.
So, Robert, when we met previously, you told me that interdisciplinarity looks very different in industry than in academic contexts. And you made me very curious when you said that. Can you tell me a little bit about how it's different?
So I think my experience in the academia is limited to my PhD time, right, and my studies. And there it was a clear personal objective to achieve something, right? I think that is a clear point. So I was only working for my own objective, for my own goal. Now in pharmaceutical industry, the focus is completely in a different direction. So we have a common objective, which is to develop new effective and safe medicines for patients. And this, no one can do it alone, right? And you need a lot of different, very different inputs from very different people and different functional expertises that you have to integrate to finally to get to a product that is efficacious, safe, and also viable for a company in terms of making a return on investment.
So the motivations are quite different, you're saying, between academia and industry. So in industry, because you've got a common goal, or it's more clearly the case that you seem to have a common goal, and whatever is needed in order to achieve that common goal is brought into the mix. Is that right?
Yes, I would say so. It's really, if a certain specific expertise is required, we try to get it in. We try to integrate it as good as possible. And we cannot just say, we will manage without it.
So when you say you try to integrate it, can you tell me a little bit about your experiences of how do you go about integrating with people with expertises that are really quite different, or with knowledge areas that are really quite different? Can you tell me a little about any of your experiences in how does this integration actually work in daily practice?
Yeah, so first of all, we're working already as multidisciplinary project teams. So a project team consists of obviously a project leader, a manager who organizes everything around the project, that the timelines are followed and so on, the budget. Then there's obviously a medical director. Then there might be someone from pharmacology. Then from the technical side, someone has to obviously to develop the drug product and the drug substance. And so they're already very different disciplines. There can also be marketing or market access and many, many other different functions, statistics, and so on and so on. And already there, you already have quite a big network of different disciplines. And if you need something in addition, there's already someone who knows someone who knows someone, right? And so you can easily access more input and more experience.
So is it the case in those kinds of settings that the way that you pose your research questions, or the way that you go about designing your experiments or getting the data from your experiments is quite influenced by what others are doing? So you will change course depending on what somebody else is doing?
So a project, it has to, it is dependent on everything, that everything fits, every piece fits together, right? So for instance, if you find out that the compound is not present in the blood circulation and cannot have any effect, right, then we can have any efficacy on an in vitro model, right? But it doesn't help us because we know we cannot treat a human, a person, because we will not have any compound there where it's needed. So there's many pieces that need to integrate, need to fit together. This is just one example of it, right? Or if the compound is highly insoluble and you can only get it into an assay when you need to solubilize it with very, very difficult excipients that you cannot use in the human, so you can never apply it to humans. So you also will sort of fail, right?
Can you tell me what do you personally stand to gain from doing this kind of very interdisciplinary work? Do you find it adds to the interest of your work or makes it more difficult for you? How do you find it?
Personally, for me, that is one of the most interesting things to have this diversity of opinions, of expertises, and trying to find a common language also to get the project along. Because yes, different expertises, different functions, they have a different language, and everybody needs to understand what the other says. If I don't understand what the technical developer says about the compound, I will never be able to achieve my work in non-clinical safety assessment.
Do you go to any special lengths in order to try to understand what others are saying to you, or do you use any particular techniques in order to ensure that they are understanding you? So in terms of ensuring the communication, is there anything that you think can be passed on to others as really good ways of going about doing that?
Well, I would say it's a lifelong learning process, and it's a huge everyday effort to try to understand and listen to others that have a completely different language. Trying to make sense for yourself, for your own discipline, what that means for your part, and a recipe how that works personally. My personal experience is I need to get along with people very well. I need to have a common ground and a nice feeling with everybody to get to this. And so personal interaction is very, very important. There are many examples in my past where it failed because there was no good relationship. I had studies with an external company, for instance, and in a case I haven't met the study director before, and I really had difficulties to get a very easy and in theory smooth study without any complications to a good end. And in another example, I had a study director whom I have still a very, very nice personal relationship with, and even studies where everything went wrong, we brought it to a good end. So it's a lot about personal interaction and having a good personal exchange.
In that case, do you think that there are some people who are better suited for very interdisciplinary work and others who are less suited to it? Do you think it's about personality?
As I said just before, right? It's a lifelong learning process. I had to learn it myself, how to listen to people and trying to understand them and active listening is the word for it, right? That is something you have to learn and to ask then the right questions that to clarify what you heard and to get to a common understanding of what has been said. And this is a very important piece of it.
Do you think that the skills of active listening or skills of interdisciplinarity should be taught more at a graduate level or even before that?
Yeah, I had management courses about active listening and things like that. There are these topics, they come along all the time. And I think you can do it to a certain degree, but you have to learn it yourself and find a way for yourself how to do it. And learning by by error is one way to do it. And you get always into situations where that doesn't work, and then you have to think about how can I do better next time to understand this person, to know what he or she is saying, and how this fits with my view of things.
So you have mentioned that your courses were management courses in active listening. So that would have been once you were already in your employment, not during your academic training.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting that this is something that is kind of actively being taken on in industry in the way that possibly it's not being taken up in the training of bioscientists. And I think that in itself is quite interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about your PhD training? I believe that your PhD was already very interdisciplinary. So maybe you already had quite an openness about interdisciplinarity.
Yeah, my background is pharmacy, and pharmacy is also already a very interdisciplinary type of study because it integrates all from medicine, biology, technical pharmaceutical development, pharmacology. So there are many different disciplines already there. And yeah, we stay maybe at a higher level. We don't go into the depth of each subject, but we sort of learn how to navigate all these different areas, right? And so from that, I was already sort of having a basic training on interdisciplinarity. And my PhD, in a way, was in a similar direction concerned to a study, a mouse model that I set up. And so I needed, because it was not clear what exactly the effect of this mouse model would be, what would be the effect of the gene that has been modified. So I needed to go to different disciplines, to someone who is working in the behavioral field or in cardiovascular and so on. And so I needed to find people that could give me input how to analyze this and to get forward my own objective to come to a good PhD thesis in the end. Yes.
And did you receive any guidance at all on how to go about doing this, or was it all, doing it on your own?
Difficult question because it's so long ago, right? But I would say it sort of, from today, it felt natural. I needed to analyze this in different ways. And then again, I asked people that knew other people what I could do. And so from this it spread, and all of a sudden things fell in place. It's about, talking to other people, diverse people especially, to get different opinions again. So it's also beneficial to talk to diverse people, not staying in your own functional or expertise bubble.
Often in academia, where everything is kind of funneled towards publications, and research is undertaken or research is very strongly influenced by what is and isn't publishable, or how quickly it's publishable, or who will be the co-authors on that, and so on. In your experience, do you find that that the requirements or the kind of narrowing that sometimes happens when you're very publication driven, does that kind of fall to the backdrop when you're in industry?
Yeah, in my area, publication is not a focus. These are highly confidential topics, so we cannot. But we have sort of confidential publications, right? Because we have to present our work to regulatory bodies like the FDA, EMA. And these are, again, very multidisciplinary documents, because there's everything from how the product has been synthesized to what are the clinical effects that we can expect. So it's a very large and very diverse document. So specific publications in our field are rather rare. And then if they are there, they might be more topic specific and less multidisciplinary, honestly.
So, Robert, would you say then that the reward structures are quite different in academia and in industry? And in academia, our reward structures are very much based around the publication, which is a gateway to funding, to promotion, and so on. How does this work in industry, and does that make interdisciplinarity more easy?
That's an interesting topic, because our personal evaluations are also based on our scientific achievements, and publications are actually part of it. So we are encouraged to publish things, right? Which is for our personal evaluation, but rewarding also is about moving projects forward and achieving the objectives of the project. And so it's both of it, but clearly the personal publication part is less.
So what I'm hearing from you then is that interdisciplinarity in your context is shaped by the fact that you have a common goal, a common project that you're all working in, and with common aims, which may be the development of a treatment, and the lesser priority of publication-based rewards.
So again, this publication part is a small part of it, and it only applies to certain scientists in the end, right? Not to everybody. And so the reward structure is very complicated in the industry anyway. So there are many, many factors that are part of it. But again, personally, also for me, the rewarding thing is to see that you move a compound into humans. You have a compound that shows in humans what it's supposed to be to do, and to get to this point. What is rewarding also, which is a rare case, right, that really a compound that you worked on comes to the market. So if you're in pharma industry, most of the time you have failures, right? So most of the projects fail. You have to be quite resistant to this. And sometimes on the other hand, you can also, if based on your work, you see the project will fail, then you also have achieved something, right? Because then you make space and you free up resources for more promising projects. The very rewarding part is really rare when you see a compound that you worked on is coming to the market.
Right, thank you. I can see that would be quite an incentive for somebody working in that context. Thank you very much, Robert, for sharing your experiences of interdisciplinarity with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for the interview.
What I take from Robert's experience is that how easy it is to be interdisciplinary depends on your setting. Academia is probably the most difficult setting to be interdisciplinary because the reward systems are geared towards nicely compartmentalized knowledge that fits into subject journals that peer reviewers easily get and understand, that fits into the remit of clearly circumscribed university departments, which are often also the organizational units that university budgets run through. Industry instead shifts the focus to a common goal. It might be a treatment, a product, or a solution. And whatever needs to be brought into the mix to achieve that goal is brought into the mix. But on top of that, nothing works without the right interpersonal relations. It's hard to work productively with people you just don't get on with. Is there nothing that we can do about that? I suppose yes and no. I was really interested to hear about Robert being offered training in techniques like active listening. Maybe this kind of training also raises the likelihood that you'll find others that you can get on with. In the next episode, we'll hear about how research and the data it produces can be used so much more thoroughly and exploited so much better when there are the right collaborations.